This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A new study from the Government Accountability Office finds that the federal funds supporting coal miners with black lung disease could be in financial trouble without congressional action. As Benny Becker reports, the GOA found that the fund's debt could rise dramatically at the same time that black lung disease is surging.
Most federal benefits for coal miners disabled by black lung are paid from the Black Lung Disability Trust Fund, which covers the cost for companies that have gone bankrupt. The trust fund is mainly supported by a tax on coal, but according to the GAO, those taxes have not covered costs, leaving the trust fund over $4 billion in debt. The GAO says that debt could soon climb to more than three times that amount if Congress doesn't take action. Other recent federal studies show that black lung disease is surging both in frequency and severity, especially in central Appalachia. Bethel Brock is a disabled former coal miner and paralegal who receives federal black lung benefits. As he explains, more cases of severe black lung could significantly raise costs.
The cost is on giving a miner a health card for his lungs and heart. Cases where a miner might have to have a lung transplant can run into millions of dollars.
In 1981, Congress passed a temporary tax increase in hopes of getting the trust fund out of debt. The increase was extended in 2008 and is set to expire at the end of this year. That would cut the fund's income by more than half, and the GAO predicts the fund's debt would more than triple by 2050, reaching over $15 billion. Even if the tax cut is extended, the fund's debt is expected to continue to grow slightly. Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said he's aware of the issue, but would not say whether he'd support extending the tax.
Well, it doesn't expire until the end of the year, and so we've got plenty of time to take a look at solving that problem.
The National Mining Association told NPR it hopes that some or all of the debt will be forgiven. That's what happened in 2008 when taxpayer funds absorbed $6.5 billion of the fund's debt. United Mine Workers of America President Cecil Roberts argues against forgiving the debt. In a press release, Roberts said reducing the amount companies pay is, quote, not just wrong, it is rewarding bad corporate behavior. Evan Smith, a black lung attorney at the Appalachian Citizens Law Center, says industry opposition to the tax raises some big questions.
Look, I want coal to make sense. I want there to be coal mines. I want there to be coal miners. But if you say that you cannot protect your workers at the current price of coal, then does the entire enterprise make sense?
Because black lung can be prevented by limiting dust exposure, experts for many years thought the disease would soon be a thing of the past. But central Appalachia is now facing the largest epidemic of severe black lung ever documented. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Benny Becker in Whitesburg, Kentucky.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:47. Some areas of fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today with high temperatures in the 60s and 70s. Clear tonight with lows in the upper 40s and 50s. And mostly sunny tomorrow with highs in the 70s and low 80s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. The Environmental Protection Agency has been involved in cleaning up PCBs from the Minden site at least three times in the past. Most recently, they contracted the United States Army Corps of Engineers to design a cap for the remaining contaminated soil. That cap was completed in 2002. The EPA has returned to the site and has been collecting soil samples to determine whether there needs to be a fourth cleanup action. Roxy Todd spoke with one EPA official, Melissa Linden, who has been involved with investigating and researching the Schaefer site for about 2.5 years.
In December of 2016, the residents reached out to West Virginia DEP and EPA, reiterating some concerns that they had about previous actions taken and conditions currently at the site. So as we do with all resident concerns is the follow-up. So that's why we went back out with West Virginia DEP to look at the site and determine that we wanted to take some additional samples just to confirm that the cap was still holding the contaminated material in place and secure.
And the cap that you mentioned, what is that?
Sure. So between 2001 and 2003, we put the cap in place. Basically, EPA worked with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to develop a permanent fixture at the site to cover the remaining contaminated soil and the last building to be demolished. In 1997, they had vandals that got onto the property and caused a fire in that building. So then we then came back because material had spilled from that building. So we excavated, placed it all in one location, and constructed the cap over top of it.
So it's underground, cap containing something, I'm trying to picture it in my head.
Sure. So the structure of the cap, contaminated material, is below what we call a geotextile, or basically a fabric layer. And then above that, we put clay. And then above that, we put topsoil. So there's approximately 3 feet of material over the contaminated material.
So what have been the results so far of the testing that the EPA has done last year in 2017 on soil or water? Have there been alarming rates of PCBs, or what have been the results?
Sure. So what we would consider a number for needing immediate action would be 24 parts per million. All of the residential soils that we sampled in December were even below 1 part per million. So they're considerably less than what we would determine needing immediate action.
Okay. And that's kind of, you said residential, so I know there were some houses along the creek that residents were worried about. So it's not exactly on the Schaefer site that these tests were collected, the samples, but just in the areas around the creek bed. Is that right?
So we sampled on the site and for approximately a mile down from the site, adjacent properties to Arbuckle Creek and within Arbuckle Creek sediment.
So nothing alarming. Nobody has to move immediately, obviously, because that's a pretty safe number, it sounds like.
Right. We had, a couple of numbers above 1 part per million in the sediment. So in June, we found a result, or our samples came back with a result of 6.2 part per million and a 50 part per million. So that's why we went back out in December and resampled. And the highest number we got in the December sampling for the sediment was a 1.8 part per million.
And the EPA has been involved with the Schaefer site for a number of decades. Dirt from the Schaefer site was trucked away. Where did that PCB dirt actually end up?
So we removed contaminated soil, and we removed actual drums of PCB-containing oil. So the soil itself was hauled away and disposed of at a landfill in Emile, Alabama, and then the drums, scrap metal from the transformers and capacitors were taken to locations, a CECOS landfill in Ohio and a Rawlings incinerator in New Jersey.
Linden points out that one reason the EPA has had to return to the site several times to do additional cleanups is because it's very difficult to completely dispose of PCBs once they have contaminated the soil.
PCBs don't tend to be very mobile in soil or with water because they don't dissolve into the water. And they tend to stick to organic material, so that makes them stay put in soil, as well as their degradation doesn't occur rapidly to make them more mobile.
Despite these challenges to clean up the site, Linden says that if the cap they've built stays in place, there likely isn't much PCB getting into the water around Minden or contaminating the residents. Later this fall, Linden says the EPA will know whether their results have shown PCB contamination to be harmful enough to human health to place the Schaefer site in Minden on the Superfund National Priorities List. But even if this happens, Linden says it's very uncommon for the EPA to relocate residents near Superfund sites permanently. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Roxy Todd.
A regional administrator with the EPA will visit Minden on Thursday to hear residents' concerns. That meeting will be held at the Minden Community Center. Download the Inside Appalachia podcast to hear this full episode called Town Reckons with Its Toxic Past While Looking to the EPA for Help. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts and on our website, wvpublic.org. As the opioid epidemic continues, the ripple effects of the crisis are reaching the newest generation of kids. The number of babies born hooked on drugs because their mother's addiction has skyrocketed. In the continuing series, Opioid Crisis, The Ripple Effects, IdeaStream's Leisha Bushak takes a look at a local program designed to keep children of addicted mothers out of foster care.
You want to go down your slide? Ready?
The joy of 24-year-old Heather Manista's life is playing with her 16-month-old son Colton at her home in Berea. But her path to motherhood has been a struggle. During the 5 years Manista battled a heroin addiction, she overdosed 12 times.
The first time I ever tried heroin, I shot it. I guess death didn't really scare me. I was just doing whatever, you know. And then I found out I was pregnant, and that's when everything changed. I want my mama.
To keep her newborn from going into foster care, Manista had to get sober. She was able to get help through Child Welfare Services, which paired her with an innovative program known as START. In Cuyahoga County, the START program aims to help pregnant women or women with young children in the child welfare system who are struggling with substance abuse to get into treatment. There are some 472 families currently involved in the program. Mothers are referred to the START program through child services, often due to being reported for suspected child abuse or neglect. Other mothers, like Manista, ask for help themselves. The goal is to keep families together and to stem the skyrocketing rates of children going into foster care due to the opioid epidemic.
See, you got your hands full. He's such a big boy. Yeah.
Sitting on the couch with Manista and her son, Vivette Evans checks up on the family. Perhaps the most innovative aspect of START is the Family Advocacy or Peer Mentor Program. Advocates like Evans are paired with the parent and are recovering addicts themselves. They can often build a rapport different from a caseworker.
When they look at you and say, okay, well, you've been where I'm at, so you get it. They don't open up a lot of times to the worker because they're ashamed or they feel that someone's going to look down upon them. But I always tell them, I'm reaching my hand out to pull you up because I've been there.
Family advocates like Evans visit their clients at home, provide transportation when needed, or accompany them to appointments or drug courts.
The role of that person within this program is to walk with the parent through their recovery process, through the child welfare process, and say, hey, I know what you're going through. I got through it, and you can too. And that really seems to be kind of the game changer within this program.
Fawn Goodell is the director of the START pilot program at Public Children's Services Association of Ohio in Columbus, an organization that advocates for child welfare services. The START program has been in Cuyahoga County for over 2 decades, and in 2017, the state expanded the program to 16 counties in southern Ohio.
Right now, we're concentrating on getting these 16 counties up and running and going. You know, in the next few years, we would like to see this program expand to other counties that are interested.
The new expanded program in Ohio also borrows from a successful model in Kentucky. Research has shown that the Kentucky program has kept more people in recovery.
For moms that enroll and START, they become sober at twice the rate as moms that do not. Kids are half as likely to enter into foster care as those that do not. And for every dollar that they spend on Kentucky START, they are saving $2.22 in placement costs. So we believe that this is going to hopefully have very similar results here in Ohio.
Good job.
Meanwhile, back at her home in Berea, Heather Manista feels confident and excited about her new life and is now expecting her second child. Manista will stay with the START program, as well as be paired with a caseworker from Child Services again, in an effort to stay clean and maintain custody of her kids. For Manista, recovery means the chance to rebuild a new life with her soon-to-be daughter and her son Colton.
My biggest fear is him hating me for what I've done in my past. So I want to correct it and teach him, like, yes, I have done this in the past, but mommy's better now. Mommy's in recovery. Mommy's doing this stuff, and I have to keep doing it. It's an everyday thing, and I'm fighting not only for myself, but for him too.
Lesha Bushak, 90.3.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills. This is WVPB Charleston, WVBY Beckley, WVBL Bluefield, WVPW Buchanan, WVWV Huntington, WVEP Martinsburg, WVKM Matewan, WVPM Morgantown, WVPG Parkersburg, WVDS Petersburg, WSWP Wheeling, and we're online at wvpublic.org.